Columbia, which is a trade association.
Mm-hmm.
Among other things, negotiated fish prices with fishermen and shoreside employees. And they could price freezes were lifted a little bit at the time, mm-hmm. and we went back into negotiating status. I also personally attended this recession of the legislature in June of the 20-year period. I've got one of these sessions when I had a session when they seized the fisheries, that's right. I don't know. Excuse me. 45 or 46.
Did they try to stop them from seizing the fisheries?
No, they wanted the equipment. They walked by a good truck and a good boat and said, we need that one. We'll give you ours instead, and theirs wouldn't run. So,
uh-huh. Yes.
Hey, I don't want to be any better. We got along very nicely and they did a pretty good job.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But in 1946, you got back the job of...
Well, I don't know. I was living in Ketchikan in June of 1945.
Mm-hmm.
By that time, it established the DNA airplane service between Ketchikan and Seattle. And I got a lot of fun. President of the industry asked me to come down. I talked to him. I was the one that the job of director of the industry was vacant. I thought it was just a leader. And they asked me to take it. I said, take it. I said, well, I'm moving to Seattle. And I did.
Mm-hmm.
Moved down there in July 1945. Stayed until 1960.
So you made quite a few trips then, back and forth.
I'm sorry.
Where did you, how long did you spend up here when you came up?
Sometimes 8 or 10 hours, sometimes a week. I still maintain my office at Ketchikan for most of that time at the house. I stayed there part of the time I was there, part of the time I was gone. And I had an office and secretary in Ketchikan. Communications were pretty good by that time.
Mm-hmm. Was your family in Seattle? Or
yeah. Part of the time in Seattle, part of the time over Eastern Washington, and we came from Eastern Washington.
Mm-hmm. When you came up to Alaska, what did you do?
Came up to Alaska when?
During this time period when you were working as managing director.
Well, the big thing was working. The big things were the representation of the industry before the legislature and also the bargaining for fish prices. There were some 40 or 50 contracts that took at that time to make the industry thick, get them all in the act. These were done at one or two at a time. And by that time, I had 3 or 4 people working for me to work on it too.
Anybody up here in Alaska?
Well, yes, they all had charter sections of Alaska. And folks that worked on the Western fishery didn't move out here. You know, they stayed in Seattle. They had an office in Juneau.
The West?
Westward fisheries.
What are the Westward?
I mean, that's across the Gulf of Alaska. That's Westward.
Okay.
Coming this way.
Uh-huh.
We're in Western Alaska now.
So these people who represented Westward Alaska all stayed in Seattle?
They worked for me.
They worked for
you. One exception at home for us is Seattle. Not one in Juneau.
What were their names?
Oh, they weren't lawyers.
They were just bargaining representatives?
Just employees that I hired to work with whatever. We had other functions too besides that, but that was the principal one.
What were your other functions?
Representing the industry and hearings, numerous hearings before the Fish and Wildlife Service respecting regulations of the fisheries.
Mm-hmm. What were some of the hot topics?
Price. Money.
Mm-hmm. Did you usually get your way, or did they compromise? Or?
Oh, you always compromise. Labor negotiation. There's no other way to bring it to an end.
Mm-hmm.
Even the guys ahead of Ford are doing it today.
So how long did this go on that you were... managing director and taking care of the prices and all?
Well, the emphasis graduated more and more to Alaska. fishermen and the workers who were coming in were second generation people, newcomers in Alaska, and they already had their homes here. And the industry decided to follow. And they made an effort to reestablish the headquarters in Anchorage, but they didn't work.
Why didn't it work?
Because the men wouldn't stay here.
Your employees wouldn't stay?
No, just like the oil company, they had the same trouble. They wouldn't sell their homes in Seattle and, you know, move out here and buy another house. And after they put on standing back to the apartment for a while, and then they quit.
Mm-hmm.
They're almost identical to what the oil company they're going to, you know. They found they can make a living in Anchorage, but they can't live in, they won't live in Fairbanks or places in the north.
Yeah. About what time was this when they tried to move the offices to Anchorage?
1960. Mm-hmm. Year or two, give or take.
What about the 1950s? I know there was a consent order then that said that the managing director couldn't negotiate all the prices for the industry, that you could do that. What did you do then?
Well, remember, we were negotiating with those who were not covered by the order, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The consent order only applied to less than all of fishermen. Because I told you about Metropolitan ago, except for Bristol Bay, they were completely ruined as employees.
Mm-hmm.
And we bargained with them, and they said we'd have any other employees. And we bargained with the employees also. There were fishermen's unions in every community, and but Canada worker unions in every community. And non-residents from San Francisco and Seattle had their own unions, different unions up here. As I say, it took about 50 or 55 contracts to get the operation on the road.
So it still took as many contracts, even after this consent order?
Yes, it did. Mm-hmm. It did.
So the consent order had very little effect on the bargaining practices?
Well, the main thing it did was, of course, prohibit either the industry or the fishermen from using economic force or demanding a status that wasn't applicable to an employee, or in the case of Bristol Bay, to an independent fisherman.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also changes in regulations made throughout the season, as there is now, maybe a dozen times. We tried to keep, they did keep on top of those. With the comments of the person on the delegates, the foreign delegate authority, participating in the rulemaking.
Mm-hmm. During this whole time, the 1950 time, about 1949 to 1959, there was a push in the state, in the territorial legislature, for statehood. How did the salmon industry feel about
Is this going to be a political book you're writing?
No. This is just on the lawyers. If you don't want to answer it, you don't have to.
No, I don't.
Okay, that's all right. In the 19...
I'll tell you why it involves many other people besides myself. And I don't want to drag them into it.
Can you say for yourself?
No, I won't.
Okay. There were a couple cases that were before the Federal Trade Commission at that time and the NLRB. Did you handle those cases?
Yes.
We were
law firm in Washington. We tried to think of one of them. Just maybe
Covington and Berlin.
Yeah,
right. Mm-hmm.
Tommy Austin.
Uh-huh. So you worked with them?
Yes.
In Washington, D.C. And also Arnold and Fortas?
No. Abe was still in the Department of Interior, wasn't it?
I don't know. I just remember seeing the name Arnold and Ford.
He was Assistant Secretary of Interior, I think. Oh, yeah, she was there. Sure, he conducted some hearings with the
Interior. Uh-huh.
And that's the past. So I think he came in there a little bit later. The trouble with the Arnold and Ford episode was decisions made by the commission in other areas indicated that they were going to eventually hold that these fishermen were not employees, they were independent contractors.
Mm-hmm.
And the bargaining with them was in concert with a violation of their trust law. was on their part of an hour. And the larger operation industry were getting pretty skittish about it. They had enough trouble with antitrust laws in other respects and businesses. And some of them were, did have other so we were, one of the things we were pointing for was to get some kind of a working relationship, get something behind us we could work on. And this, when I started this proceeding, we took the advantage of it and opened it up and made it an industry-wide and attempted to get out of losing all of our hide.
How do you feel the outcome?
Well, they don't enforce it against the operator, but not against the fishermen. The fishermen use economic pressure, boycott, strike, sabotage, and all the things they use as a unit, mm-hmm. still use. They're in direct violation of the act.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I know, there never has been a case. Any type of major stuff that's done.
So there really hasn't been any change brought about from this?
Really not much.
Mm-hmm. Can the same be said of the consent order, that there was really not too much change brought about?
Well, yes, because we stopped bargaining on the except for Bristol Bay.
Mm-hmm.
Had to had the people like A&P products and the tea company and Del Monte Corporation, and they didn't call it, but they had trusted the Alamo and more than I did.
And they had originally been part of the Alaska salmon industry.
They continued to be.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But they didn't leave the industry, but those functions were eliminated from the industry, mm-hmm. functions of dealing with independent contractors.
What did you do for these people if they were still part of the industry? Just work with the legislature and work with Congress? If you weren't doing their collective bargaining for them, you weren't in that process.
Well, now remember, we were still bargaining collectively for about 66% of them, you see.
Yeah.
Can they work against the dollar?
They were just down to the fishermen then, that you couldn't bargain with.
The fishermen, except in Bristol Bay.
Yeah.
But that was probably 15% of our employees and contractors.
Mm-hmm. What kind of problems did you have with canneries? Were there any problems with them?
Mm-hmm.
Last case, you had mentioned that you dealt with territorial taxation on the salmon industry,
yeah.
and fish traps and cannery, yeah. problems. And I know we dealt both with the territorial taxation and the fish traps, but somehow we missed
other problems
in the cannery. Yeah. Were there problems with workers? Or?
Oh yeah, sure. Numerous strikes every year, nearly every year. If you're dealing with 30 or 40 units, if you can't get them all off the market at the same time, it doesn't function that way. We had numerous negotiations going on all over the state at the same time.
Was that your office that did all
that?
Yes,
yes.
And not the individual companies?
Of course, all the companies didn't belong to our organization. They were just, maybe 5 or 10% of the effort was not with unorganized, but there were people who didn't see it. Mm-hmm. They generally waited to pick up the results and put them into effect.
Yeah. Well, why don't we move to the 1960s then?
Okay.
Yeah. Or you can tell me about the transition first in the 50s. Was there a big change in the industry? Were there any changes that would cause you? I'll rephrase that. Did you continue to work with the Alaska salmon industry after 1959?
Alaska salmon industry was different. Disincorporated.
When?
1960.
1960? Why?
Because theoretically the industry was going to move to Seattle and move to Anchorage and establish a different line of communication with its employees.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't work.
So because they couldn't have an office in Anchorage, they just closed down operations?
No, these functions are turned over a little bit at a time to other trade organizations, other people who there's been a meeting here yesterday, the day before, and the association said they're busy, they're pulling something else now, processing. For about 40 or 50 of them, I don't know, meeting over there across the street for the last couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
And they work on these same functions as we did. They can't have bargaining with my groups. It has to be stuff done separately. Anybody who knew that, I never did any of that. Oh, I did one or two. After I came up there, I didn't negotiate two or three contracts.
With individual corporations?
Yeah.
Or individual corporations?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which corporations did you represent when you were doing it for individuals rather than as the managing director?
How is that printed here?
Oh, I was just interested in, you know, which companies still kept it.
No, I don't think you have to contact the companies to get that information. I don't have any authority to.
Okay, that's all right. So 1960, you came up, is it?
Right, 60.
Why did you come up then?
Well, part of the change of scenery, and this is personal. My wife had passed away, and I had been. I said, "This is coming this way," and this has always been my home away from home. So I came with them, so to speak. They had a lot of problems that weren't. Involved in federal trade commission proceedings, and I just worked for all for individual companies.
Mm-hmm.
They had title problems in the real estate, and still had a session before the legislature. That's about it.
What kind of changes have come about in the industry since statehood?
I don't know. I guess how you mean that. One of the big ones, of course, has been transportation. With statehood and the oil development by shipping situation, having to passenger ship the passenger situation entirely different than it was before. Before the war, before World War II, every county in Western Alaska operated its own steamship company, had its own steamship. The steamship would lock their supplies and the crew in and stayed for the season and then loaded and went out in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And after oil was discovered, particularly, there was a larger volume of traffic with passenger traffic and freight moved in the state that way. And so we got to the point where it was big enough to absorb the San Francisco business, which it hadn't been before.
Mm-hmm.
Now San Francisco lost all their steamers anyway during the war. The German and the Russians seized them. We just seized and turned over to the Russians.
They were seized and turned over to the Russians?
Yes.
Why?
Well, part of the land lease program.
Oh, yes. They realized that those were all the ships that the industry had been using.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. We weren't alone in many thousands, hundreds mm-hmm. of ships were seized. But after that, these operators used air service for one thing, for passengers, and the regular steamship companies to handle the freight
mm-hmm.
in and out.
So after the war, what did the industry use for their cargo if they didn't have?
Southbound on ships that were operated by the Alaska Steamship Company and the Northern Transportation Company and barge lines and all the barge lines. Then as now, they had lots of traffic coming in and lots of freight coming in and none going out. As of the wartime, the salmon industry was finishing about 95% of the southbound tonnage. Practically nothing went south. The only thing up here besides space is gold, and gold doesn't take up any space. It's in about part of the coast along the way. So that's. But they lost the ships during the war, and we got them back, to speak of. And that era was over with anyhow. And then the Alaska Steamship Company and other transportation companies. Put on a little more tonnage and have those crews coming in and the freight going out, salmon going out.
Mm-hmm. But today there's the oil boats, is that?
Sealand and these barge outfits have succeeded in the traffic handled by the Alaska Steamship Company boats.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When you came up in 1960, did you sever ties with the Alaska salmon industry? No longer.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. You know, what kind of law did you practice then, and who did you work for?
The Lord, yeah.
I don't believe that.
Well, that's not right, you're saying. I represented several family companies.
Mm-hmm.
And well, they had come with a ride just like any other company. But then some of the senior companies. The salmon packers had a lot of problems involving tons of their property, their land, their tenures, and I was never thinking of them, hopefully we didn't own them. They were built on tide lands at that time. There were no tide lands, tide lands except in the United States. In a way, they had not been conveyed to the state, nor to any business, they were simply tide lands. And they all had to be surveyed and you had to go to hearings in the land office in order to get proper patents. That took about 10 years, and I spent about 10 years on working on that.
Did you have any problem with title when they made a plain settlement went through?
Oh, yes, I haven't yet.
You still have those problems?
Yeah, they do, yeah. Yeah.
Do you work with any of that?
I work for some individual companies.
Mm-hmm. Have you always done commercial law, or?
Well, in Alaska, particularly in southeastern Alaska, the businesses has to do with water, fishing, and boat transportation, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of law I practiced. I didn't practice any criminal law, but I don't remember that.
Mm-hmm. You've continued to do maritime type of law.
Mm-hmm.
Through the 1960s, have there been any major cases or major changes in the law that have affected your practice?
Well, the statehood, and I say the first thing that happened after statehood was they wound up without the title to their property of any kind. Prior to statehood, the federal government issued a kind of a certificate certifying that you were a lawful occupant of the property and the time to use it. Those became void in statehood. The state had no machinery to issue similar ones. The federal government wouldn't. So there's a period of 8 or 10 years there where all these had to be straightened out for practically 1 to 1,000 pieces of property. So many of them have been done yet, have not been done yet.
Did you deal mostly with Southeastern?
No.
Bristol Bay, too?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In the 1970s, you continued to do the same kind of work? Let me just backtrack a moment. You were were you in partnership, or did you share offices with Jerry Wade?
I was not in partnership with Jerry Wade. Bill Renfrew and I had these offices down in the theater building. And I never did, but he almost always had an associate at some point worked with him. He liked to be away with the old family. So generally there were at least 3 people in that office. Wade and myself and somebody working for Wade. Jerry Whittier or Jerry, Jerry Wade is one of those.
Mm-hmm.
He's there maybe a year or two.
So when you came up, you worked in Renfrew's with Renfrew, or just in the same office?
Renfrew and I came back at the same time. They both been there before, and both came back at the same time.
You both from Idaho, Renfrew?
Yes, both from Idaho.
Both went out.
I didn't know him there. I knew his brother.
Mm-hmm. Is his brother a lawyer, too?
Yes. I think he's there.
Mm-hmm. But they were both? Did he go to the University of Idaho Law School, too?
Yes.
Were you in the same class?
No, I'm ahead of Renfrew. I knew his brother. My brother was older. He said he'd all that, too.
Didn't Renfrew have a different practice from the current practice that you...
Yes, he did. Very much so.
What was his practice like?
Well, he practiced some criminal law.
Mm-hmm.
And defense and the damage suit.
And you never did any of that kind of work?
No.
how did you get in touch with him to come back up and start an office together?
Well, confidentially. Now, if you want to know, but I don't want to. I went in to see her.
Okay, when did you first meet Davis and Renfrew?
Sometime in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember any more than that. I knew them, I knew who they were when they came there, which is, I think, in the late 30s.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know them since.
Did they come from there?
I don't know if I'm going to try to answer what you want or not, but that's your question now.
Oh, I was going to ask if they had come to you, knowing that you were from Idaho, too.
They wrote me a letter, they didn't. And I'm a little bit not sure about them. I planned to meet them when they went to Juneau, you know, or went to Ketchikan. I'm not sure whether I did or not. But if I didn't, I left them shortly after. I came out here for some reason. I came back and forth there every day.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I didn't.
When did you stop sharing office space with Renfrew?
Well, I never stopped sharing office space with Renfrew or Renfrew's nominees, and there must have been now Hicks and Barker were here now.
Mm-hmm.
The mid-60s? No, wait a minute, mid-70s. They've been here 5 or 6 years.
They moved into offices with Renfrew and you?
Yes.
Oh,
wait a minute. Mm-hmm. That's not quite right. Renfrew had moved out by that time, but he had been from him by then. That's right. Renfrew had gone to Ruskin was in there. Davis had brought Ruskin in.
Mm-hmm.
Ruskin was there at in the 60s, 70s.
Did Ruskin come from Seattle too?
No. Well, I know Ruskin at Kodiak. He played for office on top of Kodiak.
Mm-hmm. So you invited him to the office?
No, I didn't have anything. He, Davis controlled anybody. He had a half at his lease. And, had a spare room and then fixed up his home. And he had these successive people in there, beginning with Jerry Wade and ending with
Dave
Ruskin.
Mm-hmm. Why did Davis have half an interest in the
personal place? Personal interest in a long time friendship with Renfrew. He told me that he was here, he was going to go off. Renfrew had been gone for a year or so. I didn't know he was here.
Mm. Was that when he'd been off? Ranching? I can't remember.
Oh, he went tiger hunting, I think, right? Yeah. Africa.
People have told me that John Manders was a good friend of his. Mm-hmm.
Well, friendship is long-standing.
Mm-hmm.
And for the many years, we both lived in the same place. And the apartment house was in. Between an arm.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew him. A lawyer here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Could you tell me a little bit about him?
Yeah, that John was a California product. Came up here, I don't know, I must have been in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
He stayed sober and didn't get mad, he was a good lawyer. And our contact was pretty social.
Mm-hmm. Did he have any family?
John?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. John had a wife who's still alive, lives in San Francisco. And he had two daughters. And a son who was killed in the war. Oh, born and raised in California.
Why did you come up to Alaska?
I can't really answer that. I've never heard of him or anything to say, and I don't know. I think it had something to do with infirmity as well, or pardon me, or something, some kind of falling out, and I disagree with it. I guess we dissolved it. I don't remember. I think maybe he, I don't know, I shouldn't say that. I think maybe he might have had class there and had business here, but I don't know who they were. The girl married Woodley.
You mentioned Woodley before.
I did?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't think so. He was very old, but not Western Airlines.
What about after you moved out with, or after Renfrew moved out, when somebody moved out, where did you move your offices, or did you just stay in the same place?
I stayed in the same place, I moved out here, I moved here.
And did you, why did you move here?
Well, it's part of the arrangement. And these folks wanted more space, wanted more lawyers on, and I just came along for the ride.
What do you do now? What do you?
Very little. I don't see any clients, and I do a little consulting work, and that's all.
What kind of consulting work? With in the firm or with clients?
Or both. Mostly fishing and land matters. Some mining.
I was going to ask you if you still do some mining work.
Well, a little bit.
Did you keep that up through the years at all, the mining work?
No, I didn't.
Do you regret it at all?
Yes.
That's what you've gotten your degree in, isn't it? Or not degree, but that's what you've studied and done at Hyden. Do you have any regrets over the...
Not particularly, no.
When you first came to Anchorage, who were the most, I hate to say prominent, attorney. There, it had to have been a small community. Do you remember who was here when you first came?
See, I get mixed up between time from things like that before I came and after I came, but I was in here frequently. I just spent more time in Anchorage before I moved up there than I did after I got here. But after I got here, I was here pretty permanently. I went back and forth to Seattle. The lawyers here was I just mentioned Menendez, Gary, father of the judge, Helmsall, John Helmsall, was here, Davis and Renfrew were here. This fellow here was here, somebody went from the records on, died 20 years ago, Bob Bell and Brad Ellis.
Did you know him?
Oh, yeah. General practice, I would say.
General practice. Yeah. It says here he died in the 40s. Find out. Did you know L.B. Wright?
Did you? Yeah. Alice was a partner of Manders part of this time. Some years. Then Alice went back into service. I was doing that. I think some kind of commissioning reserve in World War II, he went back into the service.
Mm-hmm.
It's going 4 or 5 years. That'll be Ray, yes, I mean, that'll be Ray.
What was he long?
I don't know, Christian fellow, one from a bigger lawyer.
Mm-hmm. What kind of law did he practice? Is it general lawyer?
General practice, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
He had some mind with the class, too. See, there wasn't any state court. Yes, there was. When I came up here in the spring of 16, there was a state court. The court had been after Davis was over there. When I went to see Davis over there, the court house was there. See, we used to have a judge.
Was Butcher a judge then?
Not the leader.
Mm-hmm.
There were two of them. Oh, I guess we're there. Moody.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I imagine they were 15 or 25 years.
Yeah. In those interim years, what kind of court was here? There wasn't a state court in the 50s.
Well, there were only two kinds of courts. That was before statehood and afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Before statehood, Congress appointed the judges under provision of the Constitution, not the Constitution, the judiciary, but a provision of the Constitution was authorizing the legislature for the territories. So they established what's called a territorial court, which in fact was a federal court all over again, except that the judges were appointed politically and not for life.
Mm-hmm.
And when statehood came in, according to prearranged dates, why? They were phased out of the picture, at least the one judge for the district had Walter Hard. And the other cases were pending litigation turned over the new state judges.
Mm-hmm.
And the Supreme Court was formed, the state Supreme Court, and the appeal was the state Supreme Court. Before that, it had been to the Ninth Circuit by the territorial judges. I don't know what you want to know.
Yeah. And did you have any cases that went through the state Supreme Court? Did you take any cases through?
Yeah, as a result of, I had many cases in the state Supreme Court, but none of them were started in the federal court. No, I didn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was going to ask you if there was a difference in the way the state Supreme Court handled salmon problems, canned salmon, or less of salmon. There was an industry then versus the Ninth Circuit.
I don't think there's any
I don't
recall it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Butcher was here, I guess. I'm sure he was. Scott Ford worked with the first guy from Bank. Here. Manders Mills, Davis Manfield, John Newton was here at that time, I guess. He's been here for a while.
Mm-hmm.
There are more that I haven't thought of. There's more mm-hmm. more lawyers than that. And from that time, he didn't look like that.
Did you go to any of the social functions of the bar?
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What were they like?
Just like all social functions, the minimum amount of business coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the rest was pleasure.
So it was a pretty friendly bar. Yeah. Has it stayed that way? Have you seen the?
Well, I'm not active and not taking a part in it anymore, so I don't really, I'm not really a business. I think that sitting with some of the lawyers have been not accomplishing much, really. Except have meetings with a lawyer and stuff like that. But I don't know anything more about that.
Are you talking about the Alaska Bar Association?
I'm talking about the Alaska Bar. Not the Association of the Bar, or the members of the bar.
Yeah. Not the Anchorage Bar Association.
No.
Now that there's an integrated bar, has it made any kind of difference in the type of people you see up here? You've dealt a lot with lawyers along the way. Do you see any difference?
I don't think so. Now, most of the practice I've had with most before I came here in Anchorage has been cases of substance.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, both sides were pretty ably represented by counsel. It's the custom then is now the Seattle San Francisco lawyers to come here and associate some open lawyer with them for the case only and get familiar with the procedure.
Mm-hmm.
And that's still not what we can do.
Do people not trust the Alaska lawyers or to handle the
case? No, I think it's because the business with San Francisco and Seattle lawyers assume they have more background in that client's business than who this elected counsel would have here.
Mm-hmm.
And as you notice, I have it. Practically every attorney of consequence has got a Seattle law firm on here now, and associated with Seattle, including this one here.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think.